This is The Doctor Is In, your bi-weekly podcast that discusses all things technical and not so technical. The Doctor Is In podcast is produced by ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, and sponsored by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com.
Hello, I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and I have a question for you. Are we entering another Maunder minimum? I wouldn't ask a question without the answer, so the answer is, well, no, we aren't. Now, I imagine my audience is divided right now into two groups. One group has no idea what I'm talking about, and the other group wonders how I could possibly know such a thing. How could I speak so definitively that I would say, no, we are not entering a Maunder minimum? Well, let's get the Maunder minimum thing out of the way first. We'll do that by jumping into the Wayback Machine, and we'll head back to about 1890. That's a good place to stop, and that's where we'll find a husband and wife team that was particularly fascinated by solar activity. They observed the sun, as people have done for thousands of years, and they recorded their observations, particularly about sunspots. And they discovered that solar latitudes at which the sunspots occur vary in a very regular way over the course of the typical 11-year solar cycle. Now, the husband and wife team got curious, and they began digging into the records for the last 300 years. And they soon noticed that there was a span of time between about 1645 and 1715 when there were hardly any sunspots observed. Well, they published their discoveries, and it wasn't long before some scientists labeled this period using their names, which happened to be Edward and Annie Maunder. The scientists called this time period between 1645 and 1715 the Maunder Minimum. Aha! In other words, an extended time when there wasn't very much solar activity and virtually no sunspots whatsoever. So, I ask once again, have we entered a Maunder minimum? Well, no. We've entered a deep solar minimum, to be sure, but scientists aren't calling it a Maunder minimum. You only get one of those per customer, so the Maunder minimum is the one that started back in 1645. We're in a solar minimum that started for us just a few years ago, and that was at the end of cycle 24, which we're actually still in right now. We are still in cycle 24. I'll be at the very end of it, and we're eagerly awaiting the beginning of cycle 25. So what does all this mean, really, in the grand scheme of things? Well, solar activity has a great deal to do with how well we can propagate our signals on the HF bands. That's because as solar activity increases, the ionosphere thickens up and does a much better job of reflecting radio signals around the world. So, the more sunspots we have, the better conditions we have on the HF bands. On the other hand, when solar activity is low, the ionosphere is less dense and doesn't reflect radio signals as well. Well, okay. That means it's more difficult to contact stations over longer distances on the HF bands, which frankly is where we are right now. So amateur radio operators complain about the mediocre conditions we're enjoying on the HF bands right now, and they wonder, in the depths of their misery, if maybe, just maybe, we're headed into another dreaded long solar minimum. Now, Maunder minimum has a nice alliterative quality to it. It kind of rolls off the tongue. So you'll hear a lot of hams saying, oh, we're entering a Maunder minimum. Well, as I said, the answer is no, at least for the time being. What they really mean, of course, is that we're entering maybe another extended solar minimum. But the truth is, no one really knows. The science is far from settled on this. There is still a great deal about the sun's activity that we really don't know. Now, as I said earlier, people have been observing sunspots for a very long time. There have been recorded observations going back 2,800 years, believe it or not. Now, considering how deadly it is for your eyesight to look at the sun, you might wonder how they managed to observe sunspots way back when. Well, they used what some people call a pinhole projection, and they would punch a hole in a piece of wood or cardboard, and they would use it to more or less project the sun's disk downward onto a large flat sheet of paper, for example. And in doing that, they could view the solar disk and they could see how many sunspots were present. They also could observe how the sunspots would come and go, how they seemed to move across the sun, although they didn't understand at the time that the sun actually rotated. And they jotted down their observations in diaries and various other things, and we still have access to quite a bit of that. There are solar observations going back to the medieval period. There are even solar observations in China and elsewhere that go back nearly 3,000 years. Now, what's interesting, these solar minimums have been happening, we can see this in the data, have been happening on and off for quite a while. We don't quite know why. We don't see a regular pattern to them, really, but they do appear. They do come and go. Now, the Maunder minimum itself lasted about 70 years, but the older records tell us that there were some that were real doozies. There was one that they call the Homeric minimum that occurred about 2,500 years ago, and it lasted several centuries. Imagine that, centuries of minimal solar activity. There are some scientists who believe that it's possible that we are approaching another extended minimum, something that could last much longer than normal. And they base their theories on the fact that the peaks of the most recent solar cycles have been getting lower and lower and lower. When you plot them on a graph, you can see this, and it's true. Does that necessarily correlate to the approach of an extended minimum? Once again, no one knows. I guess we'll have to wait and see. The optimistic scientists, well, they believe that we will start to see an uptick next year that will go up and up and up, and presumably by roughly 2026 or thereabouts, maybe even a little earlier, we'll be at the peak of another solar cycle and all will be well with the world and we'll be working DX on 10 meters with just a hairpin or something like that. But that's what we're hoping for. But again, we'll have to see. Now, coming back to the present day, to the bottom of our current solar cycle, is ham radio dead on the HF bands just because there are very few, if any, sunspots? Well, of course not. And everybody knows that if you tune through the bands. I mean, granted, conditions aren't as good as they used to be. It's not as easy to work DX as it used to be. But if you explore 160, 80, 60, 40 meters at night, there's still plenty of DX to be had. And you can help yourself by using communication modes that enhance your chances of working great distances. For example, CW, always a winner for that. FT8 and other digital modes, absolutely. So in the worst possible case, if we enter a Homeric minimum where the sunspots disappear for the next couple of centuries, HF propagation will continue. The ionosphere will not leave us. And we'll still work DX. It's just going to be more challenging, that's all. And you're going to have to find more creative ways to do it. Nothing more than that. But once again, if you hear somebody on the air saying, "I bet we're heading for another Maunder minimum," you tell them, "You heard on the Doctor's Inn podcast that no, we are not." And then you carefully and hopefully politely explain to them why they are using the wrong label for the minimum, and why, no, the world isn't going to come to an end. You just need to adjust your radio down in frequency, and you'll be okay. Let's take about 60 seconds to hear from DX Engineering, and we'll be back with a question and, I hope, an answer.
Ever talk to a salesperson who didn't know the difference between a rotator and a rotary phone, or a Yagi and a yo-yo, or a Balan and a ballerina? You'll never have that problem with DX Engineering. When you call us, you'll talk directly with knowledgeable amateur radio experts, people who speak your language. When you contact DX Engineering, you're dealing with operators who are as passionate about the hobby as you are. This means better service, expert technical advice, and a commitment to your complete satisfaction, even long after your purchase has been made. Whether you're newly licensed or a longtime operator, you'll always find a friendly ham who understands exactly what you need on the other end of the line. Plus, you'll find a huge selection of amateur radio equipment, get the fastest shipping in the ham universe, and shipping is free on most orders over $99. Let's talk about your station. Visit us at dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back. And George, AK4ON, is asking, I put up a G5RV Junior antenna. Does it make a difference if the window line matching section feeding the antenna is horizontal or perpendicular to the ground below the antenna? Well, George, for the best results, the window line should be perpendicular to the antenna so that the coupling from each side of the antenna to the window line will cancel out. That way you'll have a nice balanced load on the matching section. The window line could leave the antenna in a horizontal direction depending on how you route it, although it's most often hung vertically from a horizontal antenna. However you route it, though, remember that the window line is not just a transmission line in this case, but it's also an impedance transforming matching section with the properties that are pretty much critical related to its length, so whatever you do, don't cut it. Also, don't coil it up. That's a major no-no. If you do that, it won't operate as you might expect. If it's horizontal, it's also important that you do not lay it on the ground. It needs to be at least 5 or 6 inches above the ground. You can use tomato stakes for this, something like that, something insulated. Just keep it above the ground. It's also good to have a common mode choke on the window line between the window line and the coax. Some manufacturers provide these, but some don't. After that, you can put the coax on the ground, coil it up, do whatever you want to do, and you won't have any problems. It's really just the window line in this case that's critical. Hope that helps, George.
If you have a question for the doctor, email us at doctor@arrl.org. The Doctor Is In podcast is sponsored by DX Engineering at www.dxengineering.com. Background music provided by Purple Planet at www.purple-planet.com. This podcast is copyright ARRL. All rights are reserved. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.